When we think about threat intelligence, it's often misunderstood. People might have different views on what it actually is. And the people that really know about threat intelligence are the analysts and are the threat intelligence team themselves. So there's then an opportunity for the threat intelligence team to actually explore, well, how are these different stakeholders using the threat intelligence reports we're providing? And can we provide advice and recommendations on how they could improve their consumption of threat intelligence? So we shouldn't be afraid to give recommendations as well.
Welcome to another episode of Manient's Defenders Advantage podcast. I'm your host, Luke McNamara, and I am joined today by Dr. Jamie Collier, Senior Intelligence Advisor. And Jamie, great to finally have you on one of these.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. Great to be on.
So our topic for discussion today is a white paper yourself and some others here at Mandiant authored, a requirements-driven approach to cyber threat intelligence. So we're going to get into that today, sort of what the paper focuses on, some of the components in that, but probably, you know, best to sort of tee us up here. What was the reasoning and impetus behind why you wanted to put out this white paper?
Well, it started with a really simple idea, right? If we look at what we're talking about with a requirements-led approach, it's really straightforward. It's just that initial commitment to meeting the needs of the different stakeholders, the real needs within our security function, and understanding the challenges that exist and making sure that the threat intelligence that is produced really directly addresses those challenges. And I think, at least from my side, it was an opportunity to leverage some of the know-how that we have at Mandiant. So I think within Mandiant, we're really well known for talking about the threats, what's going on in Russia or ransomware, et cetera. But alongside all of our threat analysts, we've got a dedicated team and training offerings, et cetera, that are really looking at how to actually build a threat intelligence function. We've got an intelligence capability development team, for instance, that really focused on that. So it, you know, struck me as an opportunity to expose, I guess, some of that know-how to the broader community. What we find is while a requirements-led approach is simple in theory, it's often not put into practice. And it provides huge amounts of focus. It really allows us to ensure that threat intelligence is directly addressing, kind of improving security outcomes, directly addressing some of those challenges. But it's easy to stop listening to those stakeholders and what their needs are. So we really wanted something that addressed that and also something that really spoke to the lived experience of, say, 90% of threat intelligence functions. So many threat intelligence teams, they're dealing with finite resources, limited staff. They've dealt with the pandemic and the cyber-related threats there. They've now got a lot of challenges maybe around Russia, Ukraine. So we wanted to take on a tone that really reflected that, really gave practical advice within those sorts of environments.
You know, I think that really encapsulates actually why I wanted to have you on to talk about this. Because as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of our blogs, certainly episodes of this podcast and the sort of public statements and media support that we do, a lot of that is focused around the threats that we're seeing, that we're responding to. That's the sexy stuff that often makes the headlines and the news. But I think from a day-to-day, certainly more practical application component, what we do see, and I think this is reflected as we were just talking about before recording this, in the Global Perspectives on Threat Intelligence survey that we commissioned last year, is operationalization of intelligence continues to be very, very difficult for a lot of organizations. And I think even across different levels of maturity, organizations are at different stages of maturity in operationalizing intelligence. It continues to be something that can be very challenging. So I think that this is something that certainly, you know, delves into that or, you know, speaks to a piece of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big takeaway for me with the global survey was it was around 96% of security leaders agreed that we should be making decisions factoring in the threat landscape, factoring in relevant threats. But it was a big challenge. Only around 80% of organizations actually really struggle to do that in practice. So we've got this dichotomy where everyone agrees we should be making threat-led decisions, but we're really struggling to do that. And I think that's because, as you say, we're often focused on the threats. We're not focused on that really practical advice. And what we tried to do with this paper is really start from the beginning. You know, look at what are those foundational elements of a threat intelligence program, if we were going to build out a threat intelligence team from scratch, you know, what are the things that we absolutely need to get right? And from there, on a really exciting footing to build out a sustainable long-term program that's going to deliver those successes and really actually make this practical and easy to use.
So let's dive into some of the components of this. You talk a little bit about intelligence requirements and sort of how that dovetails into an organization's threat model. How do you see those interplaying with each other?
It's a really good question. So I think we start off with two concepts, I suppose. So first of all, we've got this idea of a threat profile. So that is a document that is providing the context on relevant threats to an organization, often based on, say, their sector, their industry, their region. So essentially asking, you know, what's happening to organizations that look like me? What are the threats that I should be really concerned with? And that represents a real anchor for most threat intelligence teams. But alongside all of that focus on the external threat landscape, we also need to be looking kind of more inward. We need to be thinking what's actually going on within our own security function. So that's where the stakeholder piece comes in, and stakeholder analysis, getting to know, you know, the different components of a security function. What are those different teams? What are the tasks they're doing? And from there, we can get into use cases. So out of all of those stakeholders, what are the challenges they're working on? What are the parts of their job that are really frustrating? And from there, we can understand, well, how can threat intelligence actually play a role in addressing some of those challenges? So if I give you an example, maybe we've got a vulnerability management team and they're really struggling to prioritize. They've got all of these patches that are on the to-do list, but not enough time. And maybe actually there we can start to build out that use case. This is a vulnerability management team that's struggling to prioritize. If we can provide better metrics, better threat intelligence on the vulnerabilities that are actively being exploited, well, that is something that can deliver real success, really make it easier for that team. So as we build out those use cases, we can start to turn that into intelligence requirements, which is really ensuring as we collect data, as we analyze it, as we produce and disseminate threat intelligence, that we're really making sure we bake in those concerns and those challenges, and that the reports that we produce are directly addressing those. So I think it's, there's a bit of a balancing act here, because I think it's overwhelmingly about listening. It's about getting to know the security function, understanding their challenges and reacting to those. But I think it was really important for us that we also talked about that threat profile and the external threat landscape, because we want to make sure while we do listen and while we do engage with the security function, we also want to make sure that we're really cognizant of the threats out there and that we embed that into the sort of intelligence we're producing as well.
I think a lot of organizations, maybe when they first embark on this journey, and when they think about stakeholders, they think about those very specifically to the security function of the organization, right? The SOC, some of those more tactical and operationally oriented security functions. But obviously, there's a lot of other ways that intel can play into the larger organization, even outside of entities, even under the CISO. What are some of those ways that you've seen organizations think maybe creatively about partnering with and educating? And maybe a piece of this we can start to wrap into that sort of stakeholder education, but working with entities outside of the security function where threat intelligence might still provide a useful role in helping inform and make better risk-informed decisions for those other parts of the organization.
Absolutely. I mean, there's huge opportunity, I think, for cyber threat intelligence to not just play a role in those kind of operational areas around network defense, but to have a really strategic contribution to an organization. And as you say, much broader than just a CISO function. So I think there are two areas that come to mind straight away. I think one would be on that strategic decision-making. So if I'm an organization and I'm thinking of entering into a new market, or I'm thinking of acquiring a company that's in a slightly different sector to mine, or I'm thinking about, you know, setting up a new factory in a different geography or region, et cetera, those are really strategic decisions. And I'm going to be looking at all sorts of factors there around, say, the risk, the political risk, the security, the physical security of those sorts of areas. And there's a huge opportunity, I think, for cyber threat intelligence to play a role in informing those sorts of decisions at that strategic level. So if we're going to enter into a new market, you know, what does the cyber threat landscape look there? Is that going to change our cyber risk posture, et cetera? And really providing that kind of macro level perspective on what are the key trends and factors that we need to consider as we make these decisions within our organization around digital transformation, around market entry, around acquisitions, et cetera. I think the second area, and very much related to this, is on cyber risk management and risk management more broadly. I think in the past, we've probably seen that some organizations have a risk management team and a threat intelligence team, and they're sometimes operating in silos, or there's sometimes a perception that a cybersecurity function is either risk-led or intelligence-led. And actually, there's a huge opportunity for those two different disciplines to really start to integrate. So we could start with that threat profile, we could feed that into a risk management team, and actually start to use really good empirical data on the threats to inform, say, crown jewels assessments, to inform threat modeling, and then to actually inform the countermeasures as well. So huge opportunities for threat intelligence and cyber risk teams to work more closely together, I think.
And there's a piece of this that I think, you know, involves some stakeholder education as to the questions that Intel can and also can't answer. What have you seen in terms of how organizations that do stakeholder education well, or maybe some principles that you lay out in this report, what are some sort of the key components of stakeholder education?
Well, it's a really important topic. And the reason I think it's so important that we get this right is actually because a lot of people have very different views on what cyber threat intelligence is. So if you asked people at a cybersecurity conference how they would define threat intelligence, some might just see it as an indicator feed. Some might be thinking it's all about MITRE attack and mapping adversaries to kind of operational techniques. Some might see it as a kind of risk management function. So we're often dealing with very different definitions. And a lot of what we've got to do is actually level set, help individuals understand the full range of opportunities and use cases. But I think what's really important is that we take people with us. If we're in a threat intelligence team, we want to make sure that everyone in the security function understands what intelligence is, that it's accessible. We've got to really think consciously about how we do that. So there's a few things that we suggest in the report. One thing we outline is working with these different stakeholders, maybe bringing kind of menus of different examples of threat intelligence reports, really building active relationships with different stakeholders to guide them through, look, we've understood your challenges, but these are the different types of intelligence reports or products that we could provide, and just give them a kind of a bit of an idea of what the kind of what's in the realm of the possible, I suppose. So I think a lot of this is about education. It's about active engagement. I think we've also got to be really careful as a community to make sure that we strike that welcoming tone. You'll often see threat analysts kind of make, jokes, I suppose, at what might be kind of perceived as stupid questions. You might have analysts kind of joking about all the kind of fear, uncertainty, and doubt around, say, blockchain related threats, and very kind of dismissive of those sorts of questions. That's kind of the ignorant perspective, I suppose. But I think that's the reality, right? We're often dealing with stakeholders that aren't fully in the weeds, that aren't really into the detail. And that means that they are going to ask questions, that maybe don't make a huge amount of sense, or maybe they haven't read a huge amount on this topic. And we've got to make sure that we don't dismiss that. We're not kind of snobby to that sort of attitude. And we actually really engage with it. And we see, right, this is a question that isn't the most important question to ask, but that provides an opportunity to really help this stakeholder better understand the threat landscape and what we should be focusing on. So I think we need to really embrace that challenge and embrace it with a really kind of humble perspective, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that those sort of efforts, pay dividends in the future if, you are dealing with a breach or an incident, significant one down the road, in which those other entities, those stakeholders would be getting involved in asking questions. If you've done the sometimes, painfully slow work of better educating those senior decision makers and stakeholders to ask better questions, and that they have maybe a greater familiarity with the sort of larger threat environment, the risk the organization faces, et cetera, you hopefully will be in a position to get better questions asked in that moment of crisis. So I think while it can be very difficult, especially if you're dealing with maybe less technical and less cyber fluent audiences in other parts of the organization, I think it can reap some dividends down the road.
Absolutely. And as you say, the more of this work you do ahead of time, it's just going to make life a lot easier when everyone wants to hit the panic button. If those relationships or already there and you find that you're in the middle of an incident, well, then you're in a much better place to have a much more informed and educated discussion.
So kind of flipping this equation around, why do you think implementing, especially a requirements-driven approach, is something that organizations might find challenging? Because I don't think this report, this white paper, suggests, this is just a very simple process. You just need to do these things. However, I would say it's very well laid out and not at all a difficult read. So, you know, we'll link to it in the show notes. We'll definitely point people in that direction. But for organizations that maybe have tried to implement some of these pieces in the past, what do you think have been some of the blockers to successfully building a requirements-driven, you know, Intel approach?
For me, this is a really interesting one because, as I said at the start, it's such a simple idea in theory, but it's just not actually followed out in practice so many times. I think for me, and we do talk about this in the white papers, is that there are actually many sources of distraction or different pitfalls, I suppose, for threat intelligence teams. So we talk about some of these. One of these we call product-driven intelligence, and that is threat intelligence teams that are starting to produce reports simply out of habit rather than actually engaging with stakeholder needs. So this is really easy to develop over time, where maybe a team is building out a weekly threat intelligence summary or a monthly sector report on threats in their sector. And you actually go and ask them, well, why are you doing this? And the answer is because we've always done this. And they're not necessarily engaging with, well, is this actually being read or is it being consumed? Is it actually helping stakeholders make better decisions? Or is it just something that everyone's kind of got used to being sent around once a month, but isn't really actioned in any serious way?
Doing intel for the sake of doing intel without any actual like input into operations or other parts.
Exactly. And that's easy for any team to slip into over time. You know, we can set up some intel requirements right now. Maybe a year down the line, we kind of start, you know, drifting away from those, or we're not going back and checking that they're actually still useful, or maybe we need to update them. So that would be the first one. I think the second one would be analyst-driven intelligence. So that's kind of really analysts in the driving seat rather than stakeholders. And as threat analysts, we're a passionate bunch. You know? Some of us are geeking out on Russia, Ukraine, or we're really interested in the cyber criminal ecosystem. And we want to encourage all of that passion, but it also means that we want to be careful that we're not producing threat intelligence based on analysts' pet interests rather than what's important for the organization. So that would be kind of the second pitfall, I suppose. And then the third pitfall would be what we call event-driven intelligence. So that's this very kind of reactive, ad hoc posture where the threat intelligence team is really reacting to breaking news and headlines rather than thinking about the impact for an organization and what matters to an organization's security posture. So what's important here is that these are potentially pitfalls, but we don't want to stamp these out entirely, right? So actually, we want to be agile to breaking news. We want to leverage the expertise of our analysts, and that might include expertise in their pet interests. So we don't want to stamp that out. We want to see them as useful influences in the way that we're building threat intelligence. But we still need that overarching direction. And that is where the requirements-led approach can come. If we're overwhelmingly focused on stakeholders and their needs and addressing their challenges, then we can have a bit of analyst pet interests feeding into those reports, or we can, you know, react to breaking news that's going to impact those. But it really should be the requirements-led approach that's in the driving seat within our security function.
So maybe one thing that's also important to kind of highlight in here is that this is not an entirely linear process where once you have gathered intel requirements from your stakeholders and you've done your stakeholder analysis to figure out how you're going to prioritize that, that all that just flows into the intel process and that flows into the outputs that come out of that process. But if you look at that chart you have, I think on one of the first couple pages, there's a sort of revolving circle around stakeholder feedback. So maybe talk a little bit about that, like how analysts and maybe intel teams should be thinking about stakeholder feedback and that being a continuous process.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's probably bad news for threat intelligence leaders because it's kind of a process with no finish line, right? This is, you know, by definition, it's a threat intelligence life cycle. And that means, as you say, it's a very iterative. And feedback's really important in that process. If we're not learning from stakeholders about what they like, what they don't like, then we're not going to be building better threat intelligence in the future. So one thing we wanted to really focus on in the white paper was that feedback component, because I think it's very easy to focus exclusively on the early stages of the threat intelligence lifecycle and thinking how we build these use cases and intel requirements in the first place. But actually, we've got to measure that at the end of the process as well and to feed into future iterations. So there's some, you know, a few different pieces of advice that we offer in the report. The first is for threat intelligence leaders to foster that learning culture. So feedback has really got to be integrated. It's really got to feel like it's part of the job. I was certainly guilty of this as an analyst. It's very easy to write that report, click send, and kind of think job done. But we've got to see feedback as not that kind of optional extra, but something that's really core to that process. And part of fostering a learning culture is also framing feedback as an opportunity to improve. It can feel really personal when you get negative feedback or you get feedback on how something can be improved. It can feel like you're under attack. Analysts might be concerned it's going to be negatively linked to performance reviews, all of those different things. So we need to really thrive in understanding how we can improve and really embrace that opportunity. On the flip side, we shouldn't forget the positives. I'm the sort of person, I always want to know how I could be doing better. That's kind of what focuses me in a professional setting. But actually measuring the positives of threat intelligence is really important. If we only focus on how to improve and we're not measuring what's actually useful, then we're missing a big piece of the puzzle, because we want to understand what really resonated with stakeholders and what we should be doing more of. So second piece there would be to really focus as well on the positives as well as how we can improve. We also talk a little bit about how this needs to be as much as possible a practice. So rather than doing feedback in a kind of ad hoc way, maybe once a year in a kind of annual review, how can we make this easier to do in a, you know, more regular settings? How can we lower the friction to providing feedback? Can we provide kind of easily clickable links and reports that provide access to feedback forms? Are there kind of clear contact points to get in touch if people have got ideas on how to improve reports, et cetera? And then a couple of other pieces that we recommend. One is actually to make sure that this is a two-way street. So as much as we want to listen to stakeholders and understand the sort of feedback and how we could improve, when we think about threat intelligence, it's often misunderstood. People might have different views on what it actually is. And the people that really know about threat intelligence are the analysts and are the threat intelligence team themselves. So there's then an opportunity for the threat intelligence team to actually explore, well, how are these different stakeholders using the threat intelligence reports we're providing? And can we provide advice and recommendations on how they could improve their consumption of threat intelligence? So we shouldn't be afraid to give recommendations as well. And then I think the final thing is just to remember that there should be that human component, that actually, if we can meet these people, if we can have coffee with our stakeholders every now and again, then we can actually start to build those human relationships. We can start to really understand how they're using this and how we can kind of improve it together as a community. So, you know, there's no kind of pandemic related excuses anymore of not being able to kind of meet people in person. Obviously, we're often dealing with remote teams, etc. But actually, if we can have some sort of FaceTime or at least have some kind of calls and interaction with these teams, then that can really help us to improve in a more kind of productive and conducive way, etc.
100%. I think that's entirely true. And I think also, you know, as you mentioned, I think sometimes there's an aversion to seeking that feedback, if you're concerned that it's going to be overly critical. But I would say the flip side of that is, as an analyst, it can be incredibly rewarding when you realize people are actually using your end product and it's helping, answer a question that they may have or solve a need that they had. So again, at the end of the day, we shouldn't just be producing intel for the sake of having an intel product, whatever that might look like. But it being able to actually address a use case for some other part of the organization, I think can be incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely. And I think it kind of hits at the million-dollar question, in that a lot of the time when we speak to organizations using threat intelligence, maybe using Mandiant, one of the questions that comes up all the time is the return on investment. And how do we demonstrate return on investment in threat intelligence? And that can be really difficult, because we're trying to prove a negative. We're trying to prove that something didn't happen because we had threat intelligence. You know, we stopped this attack. And often that is quite difficult to prove in a really empirical and concrete way. So part of that challenge is then thinking a bit more creatively about how we demonstrate return on investment. And I think one way to do that isn't just to show what we stopped, but it's also to understand, well, can we track the way that threat intelligence helped different parts of the organization make better decisions? And if we're gathering that feedback, and if we're actively engaged with the broader security function and maybe stakeholders outside of the security function, we get a much better sense of how threat intelligence is actually being used within that organization. And from there provides an opportunity to actually start measuring some of that, to start maybe documenting some of the wins, some of the ways that different parts of a security function have maybe improved their efficiency or removed toil as a result of threat intelligence. And that can be a really, I think, kind of underrated and underestimated way to provide some sense of a return on investment within kind of threat intelligence teams.
So as we wrap up here, just any closing thoughts you have around this topic and maybe other things that you look forward to exploring, maybe in future white papers or blogs around operationalizing intelligence?
I guess I would just suggest people really do get involved with this. It's so easy right now with all of the burnout, with all of the challenges within the security community, with kind of new vulnerabilities announced every week. It's so easy to just feel overwhelmed with everything going on. And, you know, we're talking about this requirement to the approach. It can seem like just a, like another thing that we've now got to do, we've got to think about. Whereas I would look at it the other way around. And I would say that, you know, everyone can be requirements led. And actually, if we are resource constrained, if we are burned out, this shouldn't be seen as something that's going to be a time or cost sink. It's actually something that if we can get this right, if we can get this requirement to the approach, then we're going to be much more effective at triaging and balancing competing demands. It's going to be an approach that's actually going to improve morale, the effectiveness of a threat intelligence team. It's going to set it up for sustainable kind of long-term success. And as I said at the start, our intelligence capability development team, we work across the world helping organizations build out threat intelligence capabilities. That might be governments building out intelligence teams from scratch or banks that have got mature programs that they want to develop even more. And what we see, you know, there are different challenges within those different contexts, but what we see invariably is that across all of those different use cases and contexts, a requirements-driven approach is one of the best investments that a threat intelligence team can make. So just really encourage everyone to think about how they can realize those benefits by taking, you know, what is quite a small number of simple steps.
Definitely. And a great way to shift to a more proactive footing to deal with the sort of reactive things that come down the road, as you mentioned. Jamie, this has been a great conversation. We'll link to the report for people to find it. The white paper is a requirements-driven approach to cyber threat intelligence. Thanks for sharing all your insights with that, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Luke.